All right, George, here we go.
Great.
Feel pumped? Feel good?
Pretty pumped.
All right. We're not going to put this in.
This is just us getting ready.
Everybody listening, we're not going to put this in the podcast. This is me warming up my voice.
Edit right over this. But I'll hold on my hand. Lord, I'm trying to make you understand. Lord, you know what? Everybody, they tell me. Somebody learn who do the hoodoo man.
Welcome to the Worst Scene Podcast. George, you know what? I'm going to give this one to you. I'd love for you to introduce that podcast for us.
Well, first, I'd like to say Happy New Year. This is our first podcast that we've recorded in the year of our Lord, 2022. And so, thank you all for joining us. This is, as Richard just said, the show's called Worst Scene / Best Scene. You can't forget the slash. And it's one of two podcasts about movies. And the number two comes in very handy right about now. We look at two movies, a good movie and a not so good movie. And then we take the worst scene in the good movie and the best scene in the not so good movie and figure out which one is best. Richard's already tipped my hand and I've tipped his hand. But I am one of your co-hosts, George. And sitting about 4 miles away from me is another one of your co-hosts.
That's me. I'm Richard.
That's right. He is. And then sitting about 400 miles south of us is a very frequent guest host and birthday boy.
Ah.
Who are you?
I am Dan.
That's right.
To be clear.
That's the last time we'll allow him to speak as himself tonight.
To be clear, it is... Yes. It was Dan's birthday yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He is not a member of the sketch group, The Birthday Boys.
Right.
So he is not, just to get that, make sure that's clear.
And nor was he born again in the glory of storming the Capitol on January 6th. We are recording this on January 6th. Sorry. Let's cut all that out.
That I just said. Yeah.
Oh, my. Sorry. I got January 6th on the brain.
It's January 6th. It's the right time to have it on the brain.
Yeah. So we'll take it from where you said the birthday boys, and then we'll pretend like nothing happened in between there. Oh boy.
So we just cut a bunch of stuff out right after I said the birthday boys.
I said a bunch of shit that I regretted.
I mean, it wasn't that regrettable.
No.
What you said.
It was ill-formed. I think it would be fine to say it. I was just saying it the wrong way.
That's right. I'm going to cut this out too, just so people aren't. This is just so they aren't trying to guess what you said.
Mm-hmm. I think we just leave all of this in. The whole episode is just us cutting ourselves.
I think so. As George so eloquently put it, this is the worst scene / best scene podcast, and we have two movies today and a guest host, as always. And we set our guest host's name. We let him speak for the one and only time we're going to allow it. And then we should introduce our films next. That's traditionally what happens.
That's
in
good.
The order in which we do these things. What's our good movie today, George?
Yeah, this is going to maybe cause a little bit of controversy just as far as box office numbers are concerned. Yeah, no, it's not. Because it's not a factor in either of our movies tonight. Our first movie, our good movie, is 2006's Idiocracy. And Richard, what's our not so good movie?
Our not so good movie is 2021's Don't Look Up.
Yeah, that came out in 21. Oh, I guess it must have because it's like
December.
Barely got it.
Yeah. There you go. We're really on top of things.
Wow. I mean, these films share a lot in common. They are both social commentaries and both made by people some would say are comic geniuses and have actually changed the landscape of 21st century comedy.
Absolutely. And two movies about idiocy.
If nothing else you say is true, that's true.
That is absolutely true.
Wow. Well,
wow.
I feel like we missed a spot.
Did we?
I don't know. Dan, are we supposed to let Dan talk?
No.
All right, fair enough.
No, absolutely not. You said it earlier.
I did.
Dan's taking his headphones off and leaving the room.
Yep, this is good. We just have him here so he can share it on Instagram when we post the episode.
That's right. That's always makes our episodes really popular.
We're just milking him for his gram likes.
Dan has two accounts as well. Yeah. So it's incredible stuff. Indeed. He doesn't post it on both accounts.
Yeah.
It's just the power of someone with two accounts posting this on one of them.
Please gram us. Please gram us.
Gram us. If you're listening, we'd love for you to gram us.
Yeah. Which is also what we were saying in nightclubs in the 80s.
That's right. Spend the day watching Muppet Babies and then go to the nightclubs and get grammed. That's right. That was the life in both LA and Sevierville, Tennessee in the 80s. No matter how old you were, you could go to the club, get grammed, and have a wild night.
And hide everything from Nanny when the sun comes up.
Absolutely. If you don't hide it from her, she'll steal it. Grammy. There's nobody worse than her at surreal coke fiend.
Yep. You can't see because all you can see are her sandals, but you know.
That's right. That's why it's the only thing they show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Be controversial. To show her face. Wow, this is really going well so far today. I think we're really, really hitting the spot.
Did we just do a callback to something that we didn't mention on the show
yet? Yes.
Yes, right. We did.
Yes.
That's fun for you, the listener.
We also did that on our Muppet Christmas Carol episode. We were doing a callback to an episode of a show that isn't even this show. It was
another podcast that we were on
that we recorded beforehand.
And that's fine. I would love to go do a comedy show if I could.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these things will be fucking like an hour and a half long. That's because there's so much goddamn setup in every joke.
Right.
And just tell the punchlines. Come right out, read them off a list on a piece of paper, get that done in 15 minutes. I'll still do the 2-drink minimum. I'll do three.
You have to
read them off. I'll get a good. I'm just like, I won't stop laughing. This is punchline after punchline after punchline.
Yeah.
But that's something to think about. And that's what we're doing here. Yeah. It's an experiment in which we do callbacks to things that you didn't hear. So have fun with that.
And essentially, that means we're giving you only the good stuff.
That's right. Exactly. That's what we save all the good stuff for these podcasts. So Dan is here, as we know. Yes. He said a couple of words. Dan, you'll say more. Dan?
Yeah.
I will take a moment before we get into Idiocracy.
Okay.
And say three, four things about what you're up to.
About what I'm up to?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm still in makeup effects school. I just spent all day doing a building a fiberglass resin negative mold for my final project. It was my birthday, January 5th. So I don't feel any different than I did last year, except maybe a little bit healthier, which is odd.
You're like Benjamin Button.
Yeah, right? Except kicked in way too late. That's about it.
Cool.
That I can think of right now. I'm just a little tired, and I had a weed soda, so I'm not.
Oh, terrific.
I'm there. Nice. I'm there. It's just it's all over the place sometimes.
That's great. I'm trying to remember the last episode you were on.
Was it Cocoon?
Oh,
I believe
Jesus.
That was the last episode.
Good
you
Lord,
on.
Which aired over, I think, the Thanksgiving holiday. Also, but we recorded that in September. I believe that you did some effects work on a movie since we recorded that episode.
Oh, that's
between
true.
Then and now.
That
so
is
that's
true.
Cool.
It's a feature length, very independent film called Seeking Justice. I don't know if they've wrapped filming. They're supposed to do the last big effects day, but one of the key people woke up with symptoms, so we had to cancel that day. And that was like the last day most of us had, but. It was fun working on it. We got to do a couple of blood effects, a couple of really gnarly blood effects, and that was cool. Just big syringes and just slowly pumping blood through hidden tubes. Like, yeah, that's my calling. That's what I want to do.
That really sounds great. Yeah. Well, I can't wait to see it, and I can't wait to see you do more special effects in movies.
Thank you.
Maybe something that Richard and I write.
I hope so.
I hope so as well.
Yeah.
Oh, see, that was nice. It was both a compliment and it was promoting our work as filmmakers.
That's right. That's right. Also, Adam McKay, if you're listening to this, don't watch our movies and criticize them, please. That's all I'm asking.
But punch up.
I want to make it clear as we get into this that nothing we've made is as good as Don't Look Up.
Oh yeah.
So don't look. We are not qualified to obviously Don't Look Up as what I would consider Adam McKay's worst film, and it's certainly better than anything I've ever done. So that's for you.
I also, before we get there, just in case I don't remember to say this in an hour, The Big Short, when the year that came out, The Big Short and, more importantly, Steve Carell's performance in that were two of my favorite cinematic things of that year. And I was rooting for them both at the Oscars.
Yeah, so, great.
So there you have it.
There you have it. So on that note, why don't we talk about our good film? If you would oblige us, George.
Well, I don't mind if I do. All right, here we go. Hey, gang. Remember when Idiocracy was just a comedy and not a horrifyingly prescient vision of the very near future? Remember when we thought we couldn't do worse than having Bush 2 as the president of the United States? As we plotted idiotically through the Trump presidency and have now plunged into the COVID era, it's been hard to not think of Idiocracy as we watch in horror as America, and really a good chunk of the world, devolves into the idiocy of doing our own research, QAnon, and whatever the fuck the Republican Party has become. For you listeners, I just did air quotes. What I'm saying is that since its release in 2006, Idiocracy has continued to grow more and more relevant with each passing and increasingly moronic year. Speaking of moronic, the Brain Trust at 20th Century Fox were so worried about the tone of Idiocracy and were so unsure as to how to market the movie that they dumped it to the theaters for just 1 week before pulling the prints and relegating it to video stores, where it would go on to recoup its budget in less than 6 months on DVD rentals alone. Rentals. DVD rentals.
Alone.
It also went on to become one of the most beloved and quoted comedies of the 21st century. Idiocracy was directed and co-written by Mike Judge, the genius behind Beavis and Butthead, the workplace classic Office Space, and the animated sitcom King of the Hill, which, oddly enough, was a hit show on Fox at the time of this film's release. Judge has always had a knack for holding up a mirror to society's stupidest impulses, and this film is maybe his most aggressive critique of who we are and where we're headed. And son of a bitch if he wasn't right. That's all I have to say. Good night, everyone. I mean, let's look at what's the worst scene in Idiocracy. Who wants to go first? Dan?
Okay, I'll go first.
Richard? I'll go first. Fuck,
You don't get to introduce the film and go first. That's not how it works. So, Idiocracy. I love this movie. I watched both Don't Look Up and Idiocracy yesterday. I watched Don't Look Up first, followed it by Idiocracy, and just the fact that as soon as Idiocracy comes on, I know I am watching a comedy. It feels there's just some joy behind it. Something I really appreciate about Idiocracy is how it just revels in stupidity. It makes fun of stupidity. It makes fun of society. It considers something stupid that I don't necessarily even consider stupid, but that's probably because I'm stupid. But the movie has so much fun, and it's so short as well. It's a tight 85 minutes, and I really like that about it. It is remarkable just how much Idiocracy, and it is very cliche, like, well, I guess we live in Idiocracy now, just how much it did predict where humanity was going and how fast it would get there. And the thing about it, which I'm going to talk about a lot when we talk about Don't Look Up, is that Idiocracy understands the appeal of things that are dumb. Idiocracy knows why you would choose to do dumb things. Dumb things are fun. The least likable people in this movie are the two smart people. Smart in air quotes. We'll always announce air quotes as well as alliteration. The least likable people are the two smart people who don't have a baby at the beginning of the movie. Like, I hate them. I don't like these people. And Mike Judge gets that. He hates them too. We all hate them. We hate them. It's like the stupid people are the most fun people in this movie. And I really appreciate that. It's talking about the downfall of humanity while being human. It is in no way, other than a few places, it is in no way smug about its characters. It is in no way angry at them. It's just like, this is just life. Here it is. This is how stupid we are. This is where we're going. It just got the timeline off by several hundred years as to where we would be. Even like one of the great lines of, oh, welcome to Costco, I love you. I mean, you can see that now with the scripts that fucking customer support agents are given now. The things that they are required to say, which they clearly do not mean. It is such a pleasure to help. It's just like, they're just these corporate imbeciles. Like, the more we say, like, we love you in some way, the more that you'll be happy to not get helped in some way. It captured that already. I love this movie. Every time I watch it, I like it more than before. There's just so much it's just fun. And I cannot say enough how much I appreciate how it does not look down on its characters, which, again, I'm going to come back to a lot when we talk about Don't Look Up. But my least favorite scenes in this movie are just some of the things that probably didn't age very well. That's where I'll start first. There is a lot of use of the word retard. Sure. Although, obviously, the people who are using it are idiots. They are stupid. That's the reason that it's there, that they're dumb.
Except for the narrator.
Except for the narrator. And that's where the problem comes in, with both the use of that and of saying a word that I find very hard to say.
The F-bomb. Like our podcasting best friends at Eating After Midnight. The F-bomb, it is something they look for in the films that we grew up on.
Yeah. And there's a lot of it in this.
There is.
An awful lot of it. And when it's in the mouths of the imbeciles, it's like, these people are stupid. That's why they're saying it. When it's in the mouths of the narrator,
I will say that, unlike the R word, when the narrator says the F-bomb, he says it with, you can hear the air quotes.
Yes, you can definitely say it.
And I think that was much more of a, even in 2006.
Yeah.
I mean, we think, like, how much progress we've made in that. I mean, I think that was something that Mike Judge was much more aware of than.
Yeah, I completely agree that he was much more aware of that than the R word. And so that was clearly being said in air quotes.
Sorry, by the narrator. I thought Dan was leaving. He just moved.
No, just adjusting. I'm on an uncomfortable wooden chair.
He was, yeah. So, but all of that, just, again, it doesn't stand out that much, but every time it's said, it's like, ah, okay.
Yeah.
This movie might be perfect if it didn't have that. And also, if it didn't lean so much into the prostitute and pimp storyline, because my problem with that is it's just a white guy talking about pimps and hip hop and I just do not like that. There's some really funny scene with the Air Force like officer going through his slideshow, talking about how a pimp's love is not like a square. There's some there's stuff that's funny, but I don't need that. I think that's aged very poorly. The whole notion of a pimp appearing in the film.
I also feel when I saw that in 2006 or 7, whenever I saw it, it even then felt hacky.
It's hacky. Yeah. Absolutely hacky. So my issue would be just when that storyline even comes into play, is when we first are introduced to, I don't know why my mind's going blank here, of
the army guy.
When we first introduced when we're talking about upgrade, and we're talking about and the Air Force guy is talking all about it. I just do not like that scene, even though there's funny jokes in it. I just don't like what that's saying. I think that is stupid. And I mean, all the people in that room are stupid. Like, I think the point of this movie is that every single fucking person is stupid. Mm-hmm. But I just don't like the emphasis on that as a point. So that's my least favorite.
Mm. Cool.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually leaning towards that myself. And I was kind of thinking, like, there had to have been a better way to get another person out there that didn't involve the pimp thing. But at the same time, I'm like, but then we would have lost upgrade. And it's one of those things where every time I play a video game and it says, like, you're eligible for an upgrade. I'm like, oh, damn, it's upgrade.
Yeah.
So that's good. If I may, I didn't get a chance to watch this one recently because I just haven't had time, and you guys changed
how many
orders last minute. But yes, exactly. I've seen it so many times. I was just pretty much able to replay it in my head. Not on like Point Break. So I was kind of thinking about like what about it was something I could say would be the worst scene. And yeah, as I said, I almost went with that opening scene, but I had another idea, and this is an odd one, because the concept it's in essence the time machine scene at the end, and it's interesting because I think my perception of it has changed throughout time. First when I saw it, I was like, oh my god, this is so hilarious, blah blah blah, I'm 25 years old. But when I think back to it, first off, I think as a whole it was just too much. Like, I love that there are all these little tiny moments of like quirkiness or goofiness or something like that. Like when they go to Starbucks for blowjobs, because it's also a brothel. It's like, that's so good. Or like Dax Shepard with the greatest line. Like, wow, I can't believe we both like money. We should hang out. It's like, God, it's just all they care about is money and food and baiting and all that. And there are just so many like little things, even like the whole fact that he went to law school at Costco, and then like at the end it's just this overload of the dinosaurs and the Nazis and the and all of this, and I was like, part of me is thinking, kind of thinking like, yeah, okay, we get it, they're stupid, we've got this plenty, we don't need this other thing at all. It could have just been like a role, I don't know, it could have been just a little softened, it could have been nerfed a little bit. But the one thing that I was really thinking about, it was Charlie Chaplin being the ruler of Nazi Germany. Like, yeah, that's funny, but I'm like, I was thinking about that today, and in my class, I'm the oldest one by like at least 10 years, I would say. Most of the people that I'm been partnered up with are like, some of them can't even drink legally, and at least in this state. So it's just kind of like what they're talking about, I have no idea, and like what I start to talk about, I'm just like. Like, somebody was talking about Green Day the other day, and I mentioned seeing them at Lollapalooza in 1994. And I was like, these girls weren't even born then, man. This is so weird.
Dan, I can solve everything. You just walk up and be like, hey, you guys like a TikTok?
That's good. I'll try that. I'll let you know how it goes.
Welcome.
But the thing is that, like, nobody in the world of 2505 is going to know who the fuck Charlie Chaplin is. Like, people right now don't. The hell is it going to survive another 500 years?
Sure.
Dinosaurs, sure. Of course. Nazis, yeah. I mean, they're sadly here fucking forever in some corner of the world. But, like, people right now don't know who Charlie Chaplin is. So I just thought that was kind of like, that was like a little too. I mean, the whole thing, of course, that was too much, but that one was just in particular. Just didn't sit right. I was like, it could have been like, I don't know, the Iron Sheik or you know, like a major villain from a horror movie, or it could have been like Freddy Krueger. I don't know. That would have made sense. But Charlie Chaplin is just way too particular. So that whole scene with that scene, point within a scene in particular, is my pick.
Wow. So, which is like, it's sort of the Kingdom of the Dinosaurs from Knott's Berry Farm in L.A. Yeah,
right.
Southern California. So that's your pick?
That's my pick.
All right. That's a fine pick. I think that this is maybe my second or third favorite Luke Wilson performance. I mean, number one is the Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah.
Royal Tenenbaums, that's the height of his powers. It's this and Bottle Rocket, where he's sort of playing the same guy. The pimp stuff with Upgrade, but the you can't lose Upgrade because then you lose the Untgrad joke. Like the thing about like, oh, is he Dutch? Like I fucking, it's like they had like an exchange student named Untgrad. It's like, fuck, that's so weird.
And it is just continually showing just how stupid Luke Wilson's character is. Cause he's just like, you just got to keep painting. He just never picks up on anything that's happening.
I think if this was the bad movie, my pick would be the Justin Long scene.
Oh God! Oh man!
He just comes out like smoking like a jumbo joint and like calls him SA, and it's just
your shit's all fucked up.
I really liked the movie up until that point. And when that happened, I loved the movie.
Yeah.
It's just like, fuck, this is so good.
Especially the fact that he's the doctor. He's like, just pay this many dollars. Like, he can't even fucking count.
And this is really dumb, but he's got a cash register on his desk that has an antenna on it. I have that same antenna that was like a stupid thing that has stick-em, and you put it on your old cell phone to like make a thing. I actually have used that as a prop for like a Frankenstein's lab.
Wow.
I was like, oh, that's the thing. Sorry. I will say that this movie works best when it's just a joke delivery system. I don't really care too much about that plot.
Yeah.
I think that like there's a point once Not Sure gets to the White House that I start to care a little bit less. You know, I care a little less as it goes on. And I mean, as great as Terry Crews is playing The Rock, there are things that I'd forgotten about, like the jet skis in the, was it the what's the reflecting pool?
Yeah.
It's just all of, and then not just one, it's like filled with fucking jet skis in this tiny ass pool. I watched this today and I just couldn't stop cackling. I'm like, every fucking scene has at least one killer joke. That like most films don't even have one joke that good. I'm thinking back and this is like 86 minutes long, 85 minutes long per minute. I don't know that there's another film that does what this does as successfully. Even Young Frankenstein and Blazing Saddles don't have this many jokes that land in this time frame. Maybe better plots or plots that you care about more, and maybe some better performances. I'm not going to talk shit about Gene Wilder. He's one of the all-time greatest to ever lace them up, as we say in the wrestling world and the basketball world, as I'm a member of both worlds. There's a quote near the end where Luke Wilson says, "There was a time in this country when smart people were considered cool." I thought that was great. Also, this movie was, the negative cutter on this movie was Gary Burritt, who we've also called out before because he was the negative cutter on, some of the other movies
that we've talked about.
Whoever's maintaining our wiki, we've talked about negative cutter Gary Burritt. He did Blades of Glory and maybe even he did The Cutting Edge.
Wow.
Also, he did both films in an episode.
I know.
If you want your negative cut.
We should reach out to him and see if he would like to be a guest on a future episode.
That would be great.
That would. Anyway, so I'm just beating around the bush here, but I think that I'm gonna go with Richard, and my least favorite stuff is the stuff with the pimp culture, and I think that just some of it felt so. With Office Space, there's Michael Bolton is a total white boy,
yeah,
who's obsessed with hip hop culture, but is terrified of black people,
yeah.
And that's funny, and it's really I think presented simply and done fairly well. And then this is just, it just feels like, well, these are white people writing about, black culture.
Yep.
I mean, it is cool. Like Scarface played Upgrade. So that's cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say that I'm with Richard.
Okay.
On this one.
Fantastic.
Wow. I'm the odd man out on this one.
Yeah. But you also are on our side, and that's very cool.
All right. I just thought you're going to maybe oh, wow, look at Dan. He has no problem with white people writing about pimps.
No. Oh, he was. There it is. Gary Burritt, negative cutter on The Cutting Edge and Blades of Glory. Yeah,
forget whatever you were trying to say, Dan. We're looking up our negative
cutter. Yeah, we're looking at the negative cutter. Look, he's worked on over 700 movies, which is pretty impressive.
Wow.
And not
How
a
many movies have you worked on?
Not a single Oscar nomination for cutting negatives, and that is ridiculous.
True. That is true.
Wow. I feel like we got through that one very rapidly.
We did. I feel like we're a little rusty, maybe. It's been a bit since we've recorded an episode.
Mm-hmm. I also think that we're going to reference Idiocracy. I mean, there's not a lot to say about Idiocracy other than, you should rent it.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a very funny movie. It's good. Mike Judge is good. Mike Judge made a great satire of our current tech culture in Silicon Valley as well.
Oh, right. It's just a shame that it is so chock-filled with problematic people.
Yes.
Not chock-filled, but...
But it's got two biggies. It's got some. It definitely has some, and it's also not so much a satire. It's just actual
it's pretty,
Bay Area.
I remember when the work at home order went out for a lot of us folks in the tech world, and I put that on. I was like, oh, I feel like I've heard some of these conversations, for real.
This is just real.
Yeah.
Even to the point of the problematic people being in the.
You're absolutely right. You're right.
Thank you. On that note, let's go to commercial.
Well, we don't have regular sponsors here at Worst Scene, Best Scene, but we do have a loose affiliation with other like-minded podcasters and filmmakers and weirdo mutants. So we were just talking about Midnight Run. I also want to mention there is a really great super independent film. By super independent, I mean made for nothing. I mean like pocket change. This movie came out last year. It was a part of some film festivals. I had the honor of voting for it at the Scumdance Film Festival. But Midnight Run was directed by a guy who I like to think of as a friend now, Richard A. Hernandez. And they are going to be putting out a DVD or a Blu-ray of it very soon. So you can find them on Instagram at Ramblings Productions or on Twitter at Ramblings Prod. Check them out. I also want to, as always, mention our friends at Eating After Midnight. It's a great podcast. It's available anywhere podcasts are sold for free. And also our other friends at Ad Wizards. They're also available at all podcast sources. Richard, what's that last one? I always mess this one up.
The last one is the Infinity Shirt.
Infinity-shirt.com,
where you can go and buy a shirt that will allow you to stare into infinity. You should, everybody should have the shirt. It should be, if you've ever heard of the potato parcel, it should be the potato parcel of our era. I own one, and I was wearing it around the other day at a campground, and everybody who saw it pointed and laughed. Now, normally that happens to me, but this time it was specifically because of the shirt. It wasn't because of anything else that was going on. So the shirt, one, distracted people from all the other things that you might laugh at that's happening with me. But that's because it was genuinely funny. It wasn't because it was pathetic or something. We're going too far down this road.
No.
Infinity Shirt is a hilarious thing. Infinity-shirt.com. Go check it out.
Yeah. And so Midnight Run, Instagram, Rambling Productions, Ramblings Productions, Twitter at Ramblings Prod, Eating After Midnight on Instagram. They are just all one word, Eating After Midnight Podcast. Ad Wizards also on Instagram, Ad Wizards Pod. Oh, and also we're on Facebook, and that's Worst Scene, Best Scene. And we're also on Instagram now at Worst Scene.
Look at us on all these visual mediums,
Ooh.
as for a for an audio platform.
Yeah, I
There just needs
understand
to be a
what
website. I don't understand what I said. There should be a website where it's just everything on it's just audio is happening. Is that where we should list? Is
Yeah.
that a
No.
website? I guess Spotify.
I might.
I guess everywhere where you listen to a podcast is a website where audio is happening. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, I'll say I had an AOL site, and it was just audio clips of Charlton Heston from Planet of the Apes on loop. So that's, I think, is that what you're talking about?
That's what I'm talking about.
Yep, fair
There
enough.
you go.
We did it. We did ads.
We got through those ads, and that went just fine. Welcome back from the break. Let's talk about our not so good film now. Adam McKay's Don't Look Up is a movie that aims to be this generation's Doctor Strangelove, but instead fails to be this generation's Idiocracy. While its heart and goals in educating people about climate change are very much in the right place, and it does have many funny parts, as well as the occasional good satire, its characters are mostly boring and one-dimensional. Its villains lack discernible personalities other than just being assholes. Its wackiest character makes absolutely no sense in this role, and its general view of humanity is on the level of an old man yelling at kids to get off his lawn. While both Don't Look Up and Idiocracy are about how stupid we all ultimately are as members of the human race, as I mentioned earlier, Idiocracy understands the appeal of stupidity and why it is so often successful in spreading, whereas Don't Look Up treats stupidity as something that's simply venal and hateable. The movie lacks humanity and as a result comes off as smug. Oh, and it's also too long, and it's tonally all over the place, and it just isn't wacky or weird enough or quirky enough. Which I'll actually get to when talking about my favorite scenes. All of this might just pass me by if not for Adam McKay's reaction to the film's generally poor reviews, which can be summed up by this tweet. Loving all the heated debate about our movie, but if you don't at least have a small ember of anxiety about the climate collapsing, I'm not sure Don't Look Up makes any sense. It's like a robot viewing a love story. Why are their faces so close together? Instead of accepting the idea that he might have made a middling or at least unpopular satire, he instead has decided that critics just don't care about climate change, a topic his film isn't even directly about. Nearly every negative review of the movie has emphasized the importance of tackling climate change. I want us to take immediate action on climate change, things that we are not doing currently. My dislike of this movie is that I wish he had made a great satire about climate change instead of a weak one about an asteroid. He also said around this time that Democrats and Republicans are pretty much the same over the past 40 years, which is just not something I can handle. Democrats have absolutely not done enough, partially because of their ingrained timidity. And partially because Republican politicians exist to do nothing except stop progress and be racist and sexist. If you think goddamn Al Gore and George Bush Jr. are the same on climate issues, then I just don't see how you can make a great satire about it. I look for more from my political satirists than the radio station robot on The Simpsons saying, "How about those clowns in Congress, huh? What a bunch of clowns." Also, having Meryl Streep play a Trump figure with the personality of Hillary Clinton makes no sense whatsoever. A Trump figure with the personality of Hillary Clinton would not be elected president. That figure would be destroyed in an election. Trump's only appeal is his anti-charisma. Most politicians' only appeal is their charisma. It's why the most charismatic or entertaining candidate in literally every national election, except in the elections where neither of them have charisma, is the winner. I mean this sincerely. If Joe Biden did not have recognizable catchphrases like, "Come on, man," or "Listen, Jack," then he would have lost. Make a satire about that, goddammit. Anyway, this is the only Adam McKay film I don't like. But now, what is the best scene in this film?
Wow.
Well, yeah. Dan, do you want to go or do you want me to go?
I mean, that's a hell of an intro. I guess I could go. I could give it a
Go for it.
shot. Why not? Oh, I can follow that. It's interesting. You said that this is the only Adam McKay film that you didn't like. I am one of the rare people who didn't like Anchorman. I didn't see Anchorman 2 because apparently that, but apparently that got as many laughs as this one did. Sorry.
To be fair, I actually haven't seen Anchorman 2 either, so yeah. Maybe I wouldn't like it.
I saw it, but I think I was maybe just drunk through it. It's like Harrison Ford's in there somewhere, I think.
Wow. It's interesting that you said it's smug. Our brother Damien, who'd also be a great addition on the show sometime. He was actually, we were talking about it, and he also, because when I first saw it, you know, I really, really liked this movie. I was really, really taken by it. Of course, I am a mark for end of the world movies. George can attest to this.
Come on. I mean, like, Night of the Comet, one of the greats.
Night of the Comet, one of the great Miracle Mile. Movies. But more than that, I think what kickstarted it was the Twilight Zone episode, Time Enough at Last. Mm-hmm. Thanksgiving, Twilight Zone Marathon. I must have been five. I didn't even finish the episode until I was in my teens, because once I saw, like, the destruction, ran in my room and cried. Mm-hmm. Almost had to eat my Thanksgiving dinner in my bunk bed. That's how scared I was.
That episode and the film Nightmares. The Emilio Estevez segment on that.
I don't know, man.
I think those are two films that I think really did some serious damage to your psyche.
Yes, they did. Like that Nightmares, I actually went and told Mom and Dad that we were up late watching TV where we shouldn't have, just because I was so scared.
Oh yeah, you narked on us.
That movie scared me into being a narc. But back to the situation. I was talking with Damien.
By the way, Dan's my brother, for those of you who haven't heard previous episodes.
Right, yes. So I was talking to Damien, and he had said that he thought that too was smug. He used that exact same word, smug. Mm-hmm. And I got to talking with him, because I really, really loved it. It really affected me. I was having like weird dreams as a result of this. But we talked about it, and he made a good point that made me see something that I had kind of, it was kind of like an itch that I finally scratched, is that the three main characters, there's like, they're perfect. They're, everything is right. They're good. Until like, in essence, the dark side takes one of them, and then he becomes just like that, and you see how bad it is. And the thing is, like, everybody else is written flat. They're one dimensional. They're except for Cate Blanchett, they are just there, like the president. And you know, it's like, I don't care. Like, you know exactly what she's going to do, so there is no surprise. There is no conflict. There's no anything to worry about.
There's no growth.
Yes, and we could say, like, well, of course, we have to say spoilers on this, because
say that, actually, this is like the number one streaming movie right now.
Well, because mine kind of has to do with.
Yeah. The so end if of the you movie. If you don't want it, if you don't want this to be spoiled, pause this. Then
yeah, I would say pause it and go watch it and have a conversation about it.
If you don't want movies to be spoiled, do not listen to like hour and a half long podcasts about this movie until you watch them.
Pretty simple.
Which is exactly what I do. I will not listen to it until I watch it.
There you go. That's why you've never listened to an episode of this podcast, because you've yet to watch a movie we've talked about.
No. This is all made up.
That's right.
Yeah. But so in the end scene, like when they're on the airplane to go to the spaceship, and they're like, you know, Meryl Streep's like getting ready to go, and Mark Rylance is like, "Where's your son?" It's like, "Oh shit." And I was like, "That's it? You're just gonna play a silly joke?" If they could have had like one moment of her being like, "Can we turn around?" Or just one little bit of humility, I would have loved it. A little bit of empathy, it would have been so much better. But they are kind of written flat. And I was thinking about how a lot of people are kind of, you know, up in arms against this movie. And I think it's because, like, if you look at, I mean, one aspect of it is, if you look at Adam McKay's last two films, he's gotten very far away from Anchorman, Talladega Nights, even the other guys, which I still think is his best film. But his other movies, you could see that, obviously, it's going into more dark, biting satire. I kind of considered him doing the, as far as films are concerned, the reverse Mel Brooks. He went from Dracula Dead and loving it to The Producers. But I think when he's getting into more serious territory, and I think one thing that people are kind of having a problem with is that if you look at The Big Short, it's... Well, who's the villain in essence? It's the 1%, it's the big banks, it's the conglomerates who are fleecing the average Joe guy. Okay, you look at Vice, who's the villain? Well, the main guy, Vice, oh God, yes, he was evil. Okay, we gotta get behind that. But then if you look at this one, like, who's the main villain? Us. So it's it's very, very divisive, especially in a time with COVID and Republicans, Democrats, cold civil war kind of a thing. It's almost kind of like, you know, people don't want to come to a movie to, what was it? Like I came here to laugh, not to feel, or something like that. Rainier Wolf Castle on The Simpsons, whatever. You can edit that out.
No, it's fine.
But I think it's that kind of a thing where they almost saw it as like, oh, you're making fun of me and my beliefs in a way. So I think that might be one of the reasons that people are up in arms against it. I don't know. That's just my completely unresearched opinion.
No, look, that's not, I mean, that
you're a little, very... you're a little, can you come closer to your mic, George? Sorry.
My problematic mic. It's a little, I mean, that is a thing that has been over the last 2 years, and who knows how many more years we'll have COVID to deal with. Mm-hmm. People don't want to deal with stuff when they go to, they want an entertainment. They don't want a problem. And so, yeah, I think you're dead on with that. I think that is something that people don't want to be challenged right now.
Yeah. And so it, you know, it definitely was a hard pill to swallow for, I'm sure, for a lot of people. Even just watching it, I was kind of like, ah, shit, this is gonna ruffle some feathers. But yeah. Oh, by the way, it was a comet, not an asteroid. Richard.
Oh yeah, that's right. It is a comet.
Yeah. But I would say that my favorite scene in the whole film, the one that really, really got me, that was like kind of almost choked up, is the last scene.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're all coming together for dinner. And what's great is that it's such a wonderful juxtaposition, because throughout the whole film, they are freaking out about the comet and trying to get everybody like this is the end of days, and everybody else is ignoring it. Now it is the end day and everybody else is freaking out about it. And they're finally like, well, we've earned our right to ignore it. And we're just going to have fun and we're going to have a great final night. And it also doesn't hurt that Timothée Chalamet has the fucking best line in the whole movie leading up into that. I fucking love fingerling potatoes.
It's. I wrote a note. Am I tired of seeing this guy's face? You know, about Tim Chow. T-Chow. And then he has to say that shit. And it's like, well, okay, fine. He gets to... I'll get to see his face more times now.
Yeah,
it's thinking about Timothée Chalamet now just makes me think about how, I guess Tom Holland had said he wants to slow down his career a bit, focus on his like life and maybe starting a family, and then everyone has been, well, you got to lock down that relationship with Zendaya before they make Dune 2, because you've got Timothée Chalamet, who is more of a sad-eyed Tom Holland. A shaggier, like sexier Tom Holland. So you've got they're in the same genre of good looking. So it's like you got to get that relationship like settled down before they spend more time together. She gets to see the beauty of Chalamet.
Look, I'm no Zendaya, but I am Team Tom Holland.
Oh, absolutely.
He's maybe our greatest, our nation's greatest Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
But also he shares the name with Tom Holland, writer and director of Fright Night, one of our greatest 80s vampires film. There's multiple vampires.
And he's just such a friendly, charming, likable guy. And
our stepmom was in a Spider-Man. Movie with him.
Yeah, that's right. Our stepmom was in Cherry.
Yes. She's the bank teller that he sticks up. Filmed in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. Ohio.
Yeah. That's right.
Not Cleveland, California, folks.
Nope.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Nope. Was I going? Was I saying my
yeah, story? We're done.
You'd begun to say words, so you may
get it. And I said, we're done, as in the royal eye.
Now, you said we're done, and I'm just cutting the music as soon as I can.
just lose the whole last half. But I wrote some notes here. Like, any film that starts with a Jack Handy quote is okay with me. But it's also that's very much like all of the what do you call it, the public domain footage that's used throughout this movie, like in the
stock footage.
Sure, it's sort of like it does the same work as the. Like those the images that you get like that are you can use in things. Dan, what's that called?
NFTs.
No, it's like images that you can use in movies or like TV shows or even like a photograph.
Oh yeah, yeah, like stock photo, stock footage.
Oh, like a stock photo. Yeah, it's like that. So it's sort of like that. Using a Jack Handy quote is sort of like that thing that Dan just said. You're kind of like building on somebody else's back.
Yes, yes. They did the work for you.
Right, right. I will say that this movie did help focus my hatred of mankind, which is always good. Mm-hmm. I am definitely Team Comet. Let's go. Com, what's up? Com and the deuce. Also, I like Jonah Hill, but a little goes a long way in this movie. That's a lot of Jonah Hill. And his improv is like, I know he said like he wants to be Firefest as a human, but man, the Firefest was over really quickly.
Yep. There's a reason why Firefest is bad, and I don't want to see it as a human for a long period of time.
I can't not recommend this movie. There's enough that's really good in this film, people should see this. But I don't think that this is going to be the movie that wins people over who aren't already believers in climate change. Like, I don't think that Pat Sajak would watch this and say like, oh no, I'm wrong about climate change.
Right.
Because fucking Pat Sajak is a climate change denier and a fucking piece of shit. Great game show host, but go fuck yourself, Pat Sajak. Boom. Hell on yeah. Mic. In essence, this, when I was watching this, I thought this movie is Echo Chamber the movie. This is really like, this is like, I am an NPR listener and I'm screaming my NPR beliefs into the ears of all my NPR listener friends. And I don't know that this movie has enough to branch out past the people who already know. Like, yeah, okay, I understand. I'll get a Prius, whatever. It's not going to change. It's not going to make any difference because of all the major corporations that are, you know, destroying the planet. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's where I come out on this. That said, there are some stuff that I fucking loved. I can't pick this because it's not one scene. It's throughout the whole movie. Jennifer Lawrence is one of the great actors of the 21st century.
Oh yeah.
She's holy shit. She's so great. Her obsession with that general charging them for the snacks that keeps coming back is absolutely the fucking funniest thing in this movie. And it becomes a little bit more low key every time, thus making it even funnier by the end of it, where she's still like grinding on it, you know, and months later.
It's also great because like the way it always starts up, you think she's talking about something, some other big mm-hmm. major thing.
Yeah, maybe this comet is going to come and wipe us out, but just no, like, why would he charge us for the I love that. Any movie that can deliver that as both funny and realistic as this did, you should watch it. But yeah, if I my pick I wrote this down somewhere. Okay. Yeah. On the seventh comment, I already said that. Okay. Smug. Okay. Got it. Oh yeah. I think that, the dinner scene is absolutely, that makes this movie, passable, like missable, much like our planet is for a lot of, asteroids and meteors, to hittable. Like our planet was for the comet that wiped out the dinosaurs. So that dinner scene is absolutely worth watching all the preceding 2 hours and 10 minutes before it. So, yeah. Although I also liked the opening scene with the discovery and the stuff on the whiteboard, doing the math. I thought that was great. I think this is a really fascinating and good DiCaprio performance. I think that he proves that he is really a great actor in this movie. This is a very weird part for him. But my pick is absolutely the dinner scene. I cried watching.
Yeah.
it's so real and so human. And yeah, I was like, oh yeah, Adam McKay's a really great filmmaker. Mm-hmm. So there you go. So don't come at us, Adam McKay. We love you.
I will also agree that I love Adam McKay. And also, so there's a few things here to dive into. One, I love the opening. In fact, I love mm-hmm. everything in the movie yeah. until they get to the White House. I think the way they're presenting scientists is really great. And I think a lot of scientists actually really like it, because I think it, like, even the look of Jennifer Lawrence's desk.
Yeah.
Just the things that are pinned on.
And she, like, types, the, she types the, like, she types like someone who knows how to type.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, she's, I really think that that's really well done. And it's not even right when they get to the White House, because some of the first things that happens in the White House is one of the best things about this movie is the general who charges them for the free snacks.
Yes.
Which is absolutely wonderful and something that this movie needed more of. I need more funny.
I believe the word villainy. Is nuance.
Nuance. Not even nuance. Like, Dan, you mentioned something about people not liking this movie because it goes against their beliefs. I am a very progressive person, mm-hmm. and I do not like this movie. And I'm going to tell you right off the bat that I hate the dinner scene
with Whoa! So
passion.
Oh, really?
I hate it. Wow. I think it represents a kind of middle-of-the-road politics that that I do not like.
Interesting. I can see this.
I want the stupidity to be deeper, like Idiocracy, almost not as ridiculous necessarily, while not being smug at the same time. Again, it's like not understanding the appeal of all these things that are keeping. It's not just the decisions of a very weird tech millionaire who's apparently also the guy from Heaven's Gate. Like, that's not sure. reality. That's not a satire of anything. What is that a satire of? That has nothing to do with anybody. There's this stat about how 70% of pollution is caused by 100 companies. Do you know why they're doing that? It's not just because they're just doing it. It's because of us. It's because we buy that shit. It's because of Leonardo DiCaprio. Sure. Not just him, but his character. It's and I know that it's just not quirky enough or weird enough or there's just something that just does not hit for me, and that I don't like the characters. I think that Jennifer Lawrence and Leonardo DiCaprio are doing a great job acting. Yes. In this, I don't think how it's presented as if they like it bothers me that they went on an entertainment show to present their science case, and then we're acting like it's weird. I know that all news has become entertainment, and that is something to be satired, but they literally went on an entertainment show, and then when the entertainers are responding to you, two random people from, to be fair, when it's the reaction is, oh, you're from the University of Michigan, I'm going to have other people check this, that is correct.
Right.
Even if you're from Harvard, you should have other people check it. There's a lot of, like, again, smugness to things that are actually stupid. It would be stupid just to take the word of one scientist on something.
Oh, yeah.
That's like actually taking the word of anti-climate scientists, who are usually one scientist against 100. Mm-hmm. Like, it makes sense to wait until other people have verified what you said. And I don't like the characters enough to get their frustration at the situation. In fact, it seems like things are proceeding as they should. You are a nobody, and you're trying to talk to the president. Like, the president should act like, who the fuck are you? That should be their reaction. Like, that's how they should be at first. That doesn't, it's like, we're, still, I'm kind of rambling here on this, mm-hmm. but there's just a lot of, I'm frustrated with it because I want to love it.
That's important.
I want to love this movie. In fact, I had such low expectations going in that I just assumed I would. And at first I thought I was, because that opening sequence is so good. And that general coming to with the fucking snacks, god damn. I love that. But then it's just like, again, Idiocracy understands the appeal of what people are doing. I don't think that there is a huge appeal to TikTok and YouTube and the entertainment, to talking heads on TV. But there's a reason they're popular. If you don't understand why they're popular, you cannot make a satire about them. Mm. You're just being You're just saying these people are idiots. But people aren't, we all are idiots, but people also aren't idiots. We want to be engaged and entertained. And we need, if anything, from the liberal and left side, we need to be more entertaining and engaging. I would have liked to see more of a nuanced understanding of what makes things appealing so that we can better get at the root of what we need to do to stop it. Because it's not as simple as there's just a rich guy who wants to do this. It's some of it. But it's just not as simple as that. And also, I wish the ending had been closer to what would happen with climate change. Like when they started talking about breaking up the comet to mine it, climate change is not going to kill every human being. It's going to wreck the planet. It's going to destroy a lot of people's lives. But there's, to the degree that a lot of rich people escape the planet at the end, there will be plenty of people who can escape the consequences of climate change based on their wealth and their position in society. I would rather have seen them successfully break up the comet and have that destroy like half the world, and then they're still happy because they still get their money.
Yeah.
Like it still killed 3 billion people, but we got our money, and so who cares? And it was just too straightforward. I want to feel an appeal to Meryl Streep's president. I want to know why people voted for her. And generally speaking, you can tell why people voted for someone, and you just can't tell. There's no she's just evil. And you can, evil people succeed because of their appeal. They're not just evil. They are evil with something to make people want to, that draws people to them. So I think that's my frustration, because this certainly doesn't go against my beliefs. I think we should look up. If anything, this is probably a better satire of COVID than it is of climate change,
right,
which is not how it was being made at first, but that it's not an inaccurate like look at how people have responded to COVID. I just missed the mark in so many ways just because I wanted a deeper, better, I wanted Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah.
And what I got was more of like a serious Idiocracy. And I just think Dr. Strangelove is the ultimate serious Idiocracy. And so I think it's just like a line that, at least for me, it did work. I can understand it working, and I can understand being moved. Some things just didn't hit me right. And just like Dan, you pointed out, when Meryl Streep doesn't care that she left her son behind.
Yeah.
I know that's kind of a Trumpian thing with like Donald Jr. and he doesn't actually care about his kids, but it's still, I need, just like there's just a flatness to it.
In that scene, like that's the only time, like they did it for Jonah Hill a little bit, like when he's just sitting there like,
yeah,
she's gonna come back. Mm-hmm. And in that little moment, you realize, oh right, he's just this little mama's boy. He doesn't know how to do anything without her.
Exactly.
And he's finally scared because he's not there.
And that should have been, and you could have even hinted at that a little bit more earlier. Like I could have been looking for more for his want of approval from her that she refuses to give him. Like more of like what makes them tick. There was just none of that. And again, you can have flat villains. There's just a lot of other things were flat too.
Would have made like some of the stuff where he's like pumping up how sexy his mom is.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Can I change my pick?
Yeah, please.
My pick, actually, I realize now, I didn't write it down because I thought, like, oh, I'll remember this, and I didn't remember it. It's when the comet is first visible. It's this moment where both Leo and J-Law see the comet, and like, they call each other, and it's like the Leo stops in the traffic. Like, see, it's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's both terrifying and sad, but also really exhilarating, because they are still both astrophysicist nerds, you know, like this is like, look, it's crazy, we can see it, like that's amazing, right? Oh, but it's going to kill us. But I think that there was something about that whole scene that was very isolated from maybe the politics of the whole rest of the movie and the tone of the rest of the movie, and it just kind of was. And I think I appreciated that a lot. I remember watching that. And that's when you start to get into like more close-up footage of the comet effects, which are very beautiful.
Yeah.
Like the special effects that are made for this film are very, very beautiful. So I'm shifting. That's my pick. Richard, did you pick?
I haven't picked yet.
Shit.
So now I've talked about this movie a lot now. So my notes to lead up into my favorite scene. One, there was kind of a U2 album joke on here being downloaded to their phones. And I'm like,
yep.
Do we have any jokes about Zunes while we're here? That's a hacky joke, folks. And they came back to it multiple times. Not that every joke needs to not be kind of hacky. I just was nitpicking at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, as I mentioned, love the 4-star general. I wish this movie had more of that weird shit. I love the opening. Another weird thing I like is the when Jennifer Lawrence is being arrested, the FBI agent who's like pretending to be blind with the walking stick, and just like there's just a bunch of FBI agents just around, and he's just pretending walking up towards them and then stop. It was just weird and fun and goofy. I love almost all the montages that happened. I think DiCaprio should have broke more bad. I would have rather seen him change his mind when he gets pulled into it. I would rather seen his regret happen later and having him more rushing home than he was. But anyway, so my favorite scene. I listed off the things that I really, really love. So I'm just going to go my favorite scene is what George just said, actually, which is when the comic first appears, because it has such an impact. Wow. This is what we've been saying, like pointing up to the sky, yelling at people that it's there. The fact that even though you can see it, there are still people. I think I do think the satire of how people are responding to it. People who are actually saying don't look up. I love all that. I think there's a lot of, I think there's some good satire in there, and the comet is beautiful, and I think their reaction is scientists. There's a beauty in what they're seeing. They're seeing this thing, this sort of thing that they live to see and spot on telescopes and track and talk about. It's actually here, except it's going to lead to the downfall of humanity. So I'm gonna go with your pick, George. I think that's really good.
Wow. On both instances, it's two against one.
Interesting. It's two against one.
Well, you know, that's interesting. I think that I don't think I'll ever watch Don't Look Up again.
Yeah.
I really do. There's a point DiCaprio has like a meltdown on TV, finally. And then, like, there's a jump cut to him getting, like, the hood over his head. And I thought, I laughed out loud. I thought that was just such a great cut. Like, a fucking totally great cut. So, wow.
I really liked the first hood overhead. And then it's like, I told them to put, they don't normally do that. I told them to put the hood on your head. You know, that was something I did. They don't do that.
That was just before Jonah Hill became unbearable for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Because he was very one note.
Yeah. And I like Jonah Hill.
I think he's great.
Yeah.
Well, gee, okay. So now we've got to figure out which scene is better.
That's easy enough for me to say.
Me too.
All right. I'll just say mine. I'll say the comet appearing and Don't Look Up is certainly a better scene than like diving into some white guys writing about pimp culture and Idiocracy. So it's going to be Don't Look Up for me.
Wow.
You know, interestingly enough, that aspect of white guy and pimp culture, not a flyer, that did not work. However, in Adam McKay's film, The Other Guys, Will Ferrell being Gator.
Oh,
totally did. They both had a pimp scene. Yeah.
The Other Guys is a totally underrated classic and also an insane indictment of Wall Street and the ills of investment banking. It is good God, that's a great film.
Yeah. Yeah.
Carry on, Dan.
Yeah, yes. My my pick as far which is the better is Don't Look Up, the dinner scene.
Well, there we go. To me. So I've got the same Sophia's decision that Richard does, which is the comet being visible and the pimpage. So I'm going to have to side with my partner here, and we're going to go Don't Look Up, which is a bizarre thing. Three-way Don't Look Up. And now we often do a tie-in.
We do. And we may have made separate deals even. Sometimes we'll do that. We do things independently of each other.
I think we may have made the same deal. So let's see.
But not only did we choose the same movie, we also chose the same scene, not just in one movie, but in two. We are a complete, utter co-host, locked in agreement on every level, which means if you go to a participating Costco, you can sign up and get a free law education. You must find the right participating Costco to go to. Obviously, not every Costco will provide a law degree. It's not universal just yet across the United States. And not all of them have made this agreement with us. I assume they're franchise. I don't know. I don't make these deals. I know we're usually dealing with franchises with these. But go to any participating Costco, and you can get your own law education.
Wow.
That's right. And it's usually a little, we don't like to give people hints. It's really up to you all to figure it out. But it is in the same section of the store where they do sell the caskets. So, you know.
Makes sense. The first year is on end of life, legal work, writing wills and stuff. It's a great program.
Yeah. And if you don't want to go through all the trouble of that, we have we'll call it like the bonus prize for today. Oh. And that is the Superstar with Cheese at Carl's Jr. It is double patties, as that, you know, Richard and I both picked the same scenes twice. And Carl's Jr. is one of the sponsors of Idiocracy. So this one's a little bit more tricky. It's any participating Carl's Jr. in, I believe it's New Mexico, or is it Arizona? Well, either way, take a road trip, find out. And let us know, or don't, because we're not checking our email these days.
That's right. We're not. And also, to be clear on this Carl's Jr. promotion, you do need to be in the year 2505 to take advantage of it. So if you're listening to this, you know, this is on the computer, so it can't possibly go away. You know, people will be listening to this hundreds and hundreds of years from now.
Let me ask you, Richard, if I was Robin Williams, how many sleeps is that?
My goodness. I believe if I were to calculate the number of sleeps that would be, I'm actually going to pull up my calculator, which doesn't show me. Like,
or you can also go to howmanysleeps.org.
Howmanysleeps.org. We encourage you to do that if you're listening. So this is 2505.
And you minus 2022.
It's 483 times 365. That is 176,295 sleeps away.
Yeah. Not counting leap years.
That's not counting leap years. Thank you so much.
Or should we call them sleep years?
By the time we get to like the year 2340, people have forgotten leap years. Yeah. And so it's just very hard to calculate. It's just right around that number of sleeps before you can take advantage of of the deal.
And if you're interested in more of what we're talking about, you can go back to our previous episode. Good Lord, what was it? It was House of D versus what?
What was the good movie versus it was Lady Bird.
Lady Bird and House of D. Oh, what wow. Lady Bird versus House of D. So if you want to talk about some sleeps,
if you want to hear us talking about Robin Williams talking about how many sleeps till a number of different things, listen to Lady. You know, we've talked a lot recently about what's the worst movie we've ever covered on this podcast. Obviously, Oof. Today we had a perfectly serviceable movie that could be considered great, or if it hits you the right way. House of D. That is a movie that belongs in the conversation of worst movie that we've ever.
I would say yes, but covered. There are some great performances.
Robin Williams, for example.
Anton Yelchin, you know.
Oh, Anton Yelchin is very good in House of D.
But I think
he's the only person who's good in House of D, though. No one else is good in that movie.
Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. Duchovny certainly isn't. Man, that's a movie. God, that's a movie.
Oh, that's a terrible movie. I encourage you to go listen to that episode.
Yes.
However, I also encourage you to not worry about spoilers for House of D and to maybe not watch it and just listen to the episode.
Yeah.
I still want to see it just to see what you guys are talking about.
I feel like watch that and then watch all of Duchovny's appearances on The Larry Sanders Show.
Yeah.
And it will create like the most bizarre celebrity portfolio. But yeah, I begin to think about like what's the worst thing we've covered, and yeah, House of D might be in that conversation.
Wow.
It belongs in the conversation. You're not going to have, like, I don't remember any of our episodes.
We had some groaners, I think. We closed out the year with some groaners.
Like we had Jack Frost. Terrible film.
You were definitely rooting for evaporation on that one.
I absolutely was. I was so excited when I saw him evaporating. I was like, oh, maybe we're done. We had Surviving Christmas.
Oh, that's a
terrible. That's a
terrible film.
And I feel like that's a cynical movie, too. It's just like, Bits and pieces of shit. Yeah.
Not a fan of Surviving Christmas here on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. I think that, like, let's endeavor this year to, like, have some really fascinating failures. But I always love, this is our first episode back from our very short layoff. I do love championing films that have been maligned or didn't do anything at the box office. It's often some of my favorite movies, like Buckaroo Banzai is a great movie, but it, you know, kind of died at the box office.
Big Trouble in Little China.
Sure. So,
yeah.
However, those films have gone on to become, you know,
yeah,
hits and have sold units in like DVDs and what have you.
They've shipped a lot of units. They've
shipping the units.
They've done it. Maybe we should have a special.
Mm-hmm.
Later next year, where we choose the worst film we've covered up until
I'd like this
up until this point, then we decide maybe we decide the best film we've covered.
Yes,
and then we decide if the best scene in the worst film we've ever covered is better than the worst scene in the best film
we've that's like a battle royale.
So we're talking about, like, so basically you're saying Do the Right Thing versus Titanic.
That's right.
you want to know why Titanic counts? Hit me up on social media.
Listen to our episode, Titanic versus Titanic.
Wow, that was, I thought about doing that for this last year, but, like, time got tight, so I would love to do that. I would love to do an actual tournament style thing with our movies.
Yeah, let's plan that.
Let's do it,
folks. You're listening to us come up with great ideas in real time. This is like you're in the room when Steve Jobs stole Steve Wozniak's computer. It's like you're in the room when I don't know anything
Edison stole that thing from Ted DiBiase.
That's right. So there you go. It's like those two things. It's just like that. So what a wow. Those are two centuries. This is this is the third century. This is you know. People get what I'm saying, even though if we just wrote that sentence down, it wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah, quote Snake Plissken, welcome to the 21st century. Then just one look is all it takes. I feel your eyes, they're locked on every part of me. And then my dog.